Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us on a Friday. I know everyone's probably a little tired and ready for the week to be over, but thanks for being on the call today. Today's call is going to be on the HVRP SGA. My name is Bailey Crone, and I'm the Director of Technical Assistance with the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. We're a technical assistance provider for our Department of Labor Veterans Employment and Training Service. This call is for current grantees that are recompeting for grant funds, current grantees that are interested in learning more about the changes to the SGA, and organizations that were previous HVRP grantees interested in applying for funding in response to this SGA. If there are any organizations that are on the line that don't have a whole lot of familiarity with HVRP, we actually scheduled an additional new applicant call for next Tuesday. And I would suggest participating on that one, maybe in place of or in addition to today's call, because today we're going to be targeted a lot more to current and organizations that have the experience with the HVRP program. But the call on Tuesday will be a more comprehensive overview of what HVRP is, the history behind it, and more on applying for that for the first time. You can get information about that call and also additional resources for this call and the call yesterday on the NCHV website in the conference call section, which I will direct you to in just a moment here to download the presentation. Usually takes a couple minutes for everyone to get on the line, so I'll just do general intro first. All of the information that's presented in today's call, excluding the resources and contact information on the last few slides, can be found in the SGA, the Solicitation for Grant Applications. Wherever possible, I've listed the page numbers for the presented information, but if you have questions about the source of the content, please contact me and I'll make sure that I get the source to you. After the presentation, I'll do my best to answer your questions based on what's published in the SGA, but a big reason for today's call is to allow you to ask questions or put forth commentary about the SGA, given your experience with the HVRP program, and I can fold that information into a document to send over to Department of Labor for clarification. Because of the large number of call participants and the limited time we have today, I'm going to ask that individuals with program-specific questions that are unique to your organization contact me directly for an individual consultation after the call. We can set up some time to talk. Probably the best way to get a hold of me would be via email. My email address is listed on the last slide, and it's also bcrone@nchv.org. And when we're going through today's call, if we don't have time to get to your question in the Q&A, and I'll try and leave quite a bit of time for that, but if we don't have time to get to your question, or if you would rather send me an offline question, or if you think of something, you know, over the weekend or as you're putting together your application that you would want to run by me or that you think would be important to pass along to DOL, please feel free to send that to me in an email. And also let me know if it is a question that you would like in the public domain or if you would like me to keep it just between you and I via email. The reason I asked for that clarification is I will be taking the questions from today's call, yesterday's call, and the one on Tuesday, and we will post the answers to those on the website. Now, just to get everyone to the presentation, the reminder that you were sent earlier contained a link to where the conference call documents are located. Just to walk you through that, if you go to www.nchv.org, on the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a gray box with a red outline that says NCHV Conference Calls. Now, if you click on that, you'll see the announcements for both calls, both the new applicants and returning applicants. Go ahead and scroll down to the bottom underneath number 2 where it says HVRP Program and Application Returning Applicants. Download the presentation here. It's a PDF. When you click on that, it should say Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program, Program and Application Returning Applicants. And hopefully everyone has had a chance to download that. So hopefully everyone has the presentation up. If you want to go ahead and go to slide 2, it's our general agenda for today. We're going to spend about 40 minutes going through the agenda as outlined here. After that, we'll open the call up to questions and comments. Again, the material presented here is from the SGA itself, and I'll answer questions directly related to this material, but there might be certain points of clarification beyond what's defined here, and I will gather that data if I can't answer it and submit that to DOL Vets for additional clarification, and then we'll post that information up on the website right where the call information was located. And the audio of today's call will also be posted within the next few days, so probably by Monday or Tuesday, if you would like to download a copy of the audio. And I want to reiterate, too, that please take this opportunity to express your feedback on the SGA. I'm sure it's been about a week, so I'm sure folks have had time to read through it and have some initial reactions. There have been quite a few changes, probably since the last time that you applied, so we do want to make sure that we address those. And we do understand that your staff members are the ones who make HVRP successful and that you know how to make these programs operate better than anyone else. So we are sincerely interested in receiving your feedback, and I know that DOL Vets is as well. And we want to try and make sure that we're as responsive as possible. So if you have specific programmatic comments, whether they be concerns, accommodations, I hope that everyone will remain respectful and deliver their feedback in a way that provides constructive feedback to DOL Vets to inform future SGAs and program implementation. And again, if you want to share the feedback but don't wish to do so during the Q&A, feel free to send me an email, and there will also be a post-call survey that will allow you to fill in anonymous comments there as well. One last thing to note, you'll see several times throughout the presentation the word new, and it's bold in blue. I put that in there when something has either changed or been updated or is a new addition to the SGA, just to mark those. But at the end of the presentation, we'll go over in more detail what the changes are within different categories. So go ahead and go to slide 3. We're going to talk for a bit about general information and submission information. If you go to slide 4, this is just general information about the authorization, the reauthorization for HVRP. I included this because of the renewed authorization as of October 5th, 2011. And this reauthorizes HVRP through fiscal year 2012. And on slide 5, obviously these are quite familiar to everyone on the call today. These are the two main objectives of HVRP. Sure, we're all familiar with those, but always good to keep in mind. On slide 6, you'll see the funding levels and categories. There's $15 million total that will be distributed between urban and non-urban grantees. The actual distribution of grants will be up to the grant officer and will be dependent on the overall strength of the applications. So the distribution between non-urban and urban will be dependent on that factor, not a set a dollar figure for each one. Also, when you are constructing your budget, be sure that you don't exceed these funding levels. So it's $200,000 for non-urban, $300,000 for urban. If you request more than those maximums, your application will be deemed non-responsive and won't be graded. I just want to, again, clarify that distinction between the urban and non-urban status. You want to clearly identify that in your application to figure out which category your program is in. You want to take a look at Appendix G, which comes from the Metropolitan Statistical Areas, the MSA of the 75 largest cities. Also a note, please double check that you're using the population data that's listed here in this slide and also in the SGA documents that are linked at the end of this presentation. If you downloaded all of the SGA docs right after they were posted, you might have the incorrect population data. It's been updated since they were first posted. So definitely double check that to make sure it reflects here. It reflects the data given here and also that you have the link to the docs that's provided at the end of the presentation today. It is your responsibility as an applicant to check back regularly on the DOL Vets HVRP site and also on grants.gov to see if there are any changes. This is just one that has been noticed, so please be sure that you do have the right data to make sure you're applying in the right funding category. Also good to keep in mind that the initial acceptance of your proposal does not necessarily equal final approval. DOL may enter into negotiations about your budget, the program components, or your administrative system. Good things to keep in mind. Moving on to the scope of your program design, these should seem familiar as these are components that have been pretty consistent over previous SGAs. I will point out that there was increased focus in this SGA on providing services specifically to female veterans and veterans with families. It's stated in the SGA and implied for your program components that while there is the specific subset of HVRP grants that are targeted toward homeless female veterans and veterans with families, all HVRP programs should anticipate providing services that are targeted to these two subpopulations, even though they are regular HVRP grants. If you take a look at the applicant eligibility on page 8, this is pretty much the same as it has been for quite a while. The only point that I would note here is under nonprofit organizations, there is the increased listing of the faith-based organizations, which that was a component in previous SGAs, but it was specifically listed in the eligibility in this SGA. So I did want to point out that emphasis for entities that might be at faith-based organizations. If you're a faith-based entity and you do make hiring decisions based on religious beliefs, you may still be eligible under Title I of the Workforce Investment Act. If you're awarded funding, you'll receive additional clarification at that time on what exactly you need to do. I want to point out as well that if a state agency proposes in its application to serve one or more jurisdictions within the state, this doesn't preclude a city or county agency from submitting an application to serve its own jurisdiction. So just something good to keep in mind. Now let's take a look at the participant eligibility and a few other important definitions in slide 9. To be eligible to be a participant in HVRP, you must be both a veteran and homeless. Definition of veteran has remained pretty standard. Just want to reinforce, because I have received a lot of questions on this recently, veterans with dishonorable discharge are not eligible for HVRP services. That doesn't mean that your overall organization is restricted from working with veterans with dishonorable discharge status, but those individual veterans cannot receive services for HVRP or through HVRP. Looking at the expanded definition of homelessness that's given on slide 10, to meet the goals of VA and the President's Federal Strategic Plan to Prevent and End Homelessness, DOL Vets adopted the Hearth Act definition of homelessness. This was changed in the SGA as of last year, so it's an expanded definition. I would pay particular attention to the second bullet from the bottom. So the one that starts with an individual or family who will imminently lose their housing, to actually prove this in tangible terms, the way you would evidence that component would be a court order that's resulting from an eviction that notifies the family that they have to leave within 14 days. If they have a current primary nighttime residence, that's a hotel or a motel room, but they don't have the resources to reside there for more than 14 days, or if there's credible evidence, which could include an oral statement from a family member indicating that the person with whom the individual is staying cannot stay there for more than 14 days. Looking at slide 11, two additional definitions that are helpful and are used multiple times throughout the SGA, chronically homeless and disabling condition. These are just two other important pieces to note. The last two pieces there, the proprietary or business confidential information and personally identifiable information, I wanted to point these out specifically because of the transparency section that is in this SGA. It was in the previous one, but it has included additional clarification for this year, so I did want to talk about this briefly. Organizations that are receiving funding under HVRP will have their abstract or executive summary and their redacted technical proposal published following their grant award. This will be after the grant award has already been given. This is a great opportunity to publicize your activities to the public, and DOL is sensitive to the reality that some information could cause personal or professional harm to the organization if that data is published. As a result, if you're awarded funds, your abstract will be published as it is. So as you submitted it, the abstract will be published. But the proposal can be redacted. Now, upon award, you'll have 2 weeks to submit your redacted technical proposal, and you'll receive additional details at that point, how and to whom you submit that changed proposal. But keep in mind that you do have a set period of time before you must submit that proposal. And if they don't receive your redacted version within 2 weeks, they will go ahead and publish your original technical proposal. They'll just remove all of the personally identifiable information, but the proprietary or business confidential information will remain. So it is important to keep that in mind and maybe start working on that beforehand, although you won't need to submit it until after award. You also want to keep in mind that you don't want to go overboard with the redactions. It shouldn't be whole, entire segments of your tech proposal that are being cut out. So just keep an eye on that when you are putting that together. Let's go ahead and go to slides 13 and then on to 14, responding to the SGA. Just a couple little technical pieces on the page limits and formatting. There's a 50-page total limit and a 15-page maximum on the technical proposal. Now, there are documents that are going to be included in your application that fall outside of both the 15-page and or the 50-page. At the end of the presentation, there are two lists for the documents that are not included in those page limits. So definitely take a look at those, and we'll talk about those in a little bit. Something additional that's new, if you're submitting your documents through grants.gov, they have to be in one of these three formats. You can no longer use Excel documents. The individuals who are doing the grading, if you submit outside of one of these formats, they'll try to open the document, but if it doesn't open easily, they won't open it. So you might end up having a non-responsive application if one of the documents you submit is in the wrong, is in the wrong format, and you lose out on submitting that document. Also, just a standard practice, something that's helpful, and the folks who have grant writing experience I'm sure know this, but it's easy if you label your section headings to match what's in the SGA. We'll go through those in just a minute, but that will definitely help the graders as they're going through your application. A nice thing about this SGA is it specifically states when when the award announcements are expected. They'll probably be coming out mid-June, depending on how much time is needed for review. If folks had any experience with last year, it was a little bit difficult because the award announcements didn't come out until after July 1st, with program activities needing to start on July 1st. We don't anticipate that being an issue this year because the SGA has come out so much earlier. So if there was some worry about the way the process went last year, no need to stress about that at this point. You should receive those announcements by mid-June. Program activities are still expected to start on day one of the grant period. Slide 16 contains some pretty important information, so I would definitely take a look at that one now. Just some additional information about the application itself. I know that there were some questions last year with co-enrollment of participants in HVRP and VWIP. The way that I'm seeing it is co-enrollment with each one of these programs is largely dependent on the organization, not on the individual. So if one organization has both an HVRP and a VWIP grant, you can't co-enroll one individual in both programs, but if you have an HVRP grant and you have an individual who is enrolled as a participant in your HVRP program and they also are enrolled in a VWIP under another organization, that is actually okay. You just can't have HVRP and VWIP under one organization that's co-enrolling participants. If you look at the funding restrictions piece, once again, your admin costs can't go above 20% of your award. You've never been able to be reimbursed for pre-award costs, but previously it said that with approval, you could be reimbursed for those costs. In this SGA, under no circumstances will you be reimbursed for any pre-award costs. Another new funding restriction that's listed in this SGA is no grant funds can be used for participant wages. that also includes wage replacement in the form of a stipend. So no HVRP funds can be used in that capacity. I would also be aware of the salary and bonus limitations that are listed on page 36. 36 of the SGA, not of the slides. So moving on to the submission process on slide 17, there's a new time. It's no longer 5 p.m. It's now 4 p.m., and the date is April 30th that it's due. The date actually isn't in the SGA. We got that from grants.gov. So once again, just be sure to keep checking back to grants.gov and to the HGRP site on DOL's site to see if there's any additional information there. But it is 4 o'clock, April 30th. And then you'll see the acceptable and the unacceptable methods of submission listed there. These are pretty standard. With grants.gov, you definitely want to start early. And if you go on to slide 18, a little bit more information there about that process. Signing up for and submitting through grants.gov can take up to 4 weeks. I would definitely download the checklist that they have right there when you go to grants.gov to sign up, because that can walk you through the process and make it move a lot faster for you. Now, I think there was some confusion about submission through grants.gov and what actually constituted a full submission. In order for your submission to be counted as being on time, because there can be no late submissions, you have to get the timestamp which corresponds to the first email. So when you submit your application, you receive a timestamp on your application, and almost immediately you receive an email that confirms receipt and gives you a tracking number. Now within the next few days, you'll get a second email that confirms either that your application is rejected due to errors or is validated. Now, I would suggest if you can, submitting your application a few days earlier, because if you submit your application, you receive the first email automatically, and then a few days later, you get the second email that rejects your application due to errors, but it's already past the April 30th 4 p.m. deadline, you actually can't go in, make the changes, and resubmit it. At that point, it's too late and your application will not be graded. So if at all possible, if you're submitting through grants.gov, try to do so as early as possible so that you can get not only the first but the second email. If you are mailing your application, just make sure that your two copies are quote-unquote copy-ready, so that there aren't any tabs or staples or anything in them that they can be very easily copied. Your originals, the ones that are signed in blue ink, you will want to have tab dividers with that section, but your two copies should just be ready to copy. And it's also not listed here, but you need to have a CD that corresponds with your mailed documents. And you want to definitely double, triple, quadruple check to make sure that your original matches both of your copies, which matches the order that's listed in your CD. You have to make sure those are all the same. The last piece, there was additional clarification in the SGA on if you submit multiple applications. So if you were to submit two applications on grants.gov, the last qualifying submission will be the one that's accepted. If for some reason you send both, you submit on grants.gov and also submit a hard copy, you'll want to send a hard copy letter with your hard copy explaining which one they're actually supposed to be reviewing. But try to only submit one, if at all possible. Let's move on to slide 9, the application structure and the point system. It's 100 points total, and we'll do the points breakdown in just a minute. If you take a look at part 1, the cost proposal, and a lot of the next probably 15 slides, I'm going to go through pretty quickly because I want to leave a lot of time for the Q&A and to talk about the changes to the SGA. If there are pieces of this that you want additional clarification on, I go through them in a lot of detail on the call on Tuesday. So you can go ahead and register for that one, or just shoot me an email and we can talk about it either via email or over the phone. So just a couple of points to note here. You want to make sure that the SF-424 is signed by the appropriate official. And the last piece on there, you need to register and remain active in the federal Central Contracting Registry, the CCR, before you submit your application. There are some really comprehensive details on that process on page 23 of the SGA, but just be sure you note that you do have to register there before submitting your application, and I'm assuming most of you already have. in your budget narrative, which is slide 21, don't forget to budget for a post-award conference for two representatives for 4 days using Washington, D.C. as your base. Now, your planned travel can't exceed 5% of the total funds you're requesting, so just something good to keep in mind. Just another note on the equipment purchases. For items that cost more than $5,000 per unit, you need to have those specifically approved by your GOATR, and you need to outline and explain those in this section. And one more note on the cost proposal, make sure that all of the numbers match up. This is another double, triple, quadruple check thing. If for some reason your numbers don't match up, the number from the SF-424 will be the final budget number that's accepted. So make sure that all of those numbers do match up in your final budget request. I'm going to skip part two for a second and just go straight to the attachments for the technical proposal. These are pretty self-explanatory. The only thing that I'll talk about briefly is the executive summary or the abstract. You can think of this with 4 main components, 1 that's background and 3 that are process-oriented. The background piece is the geographic area, including the congressional district and definitely the type of grant, so urban or non-urban. The 3 process-oriented pieces are your strategy, your timeline, and your proposed outcomes. So think of those 4 main components when you're putting together your executive summary. Your audit should have occurred within the last 18 months. And be sure to keep all of these documents together. If you submit additional pieces later, if you are mailing it and you mail your audit a week after the rest of your application, they're not going to be able to get those together. So you will not have an audit with your application. So be sure to keep all of these documents together when you are submitting. Go ahead and talk about the technical proposal. You want to be sure to not only address the evaluation criteria, but also outline your measures for success in each one of these pieces. On page 24, you'll see the points breakdown. All right, let's move on to the need for the project on slide 25. As in previous years, wherever possible, you want to describe your specific geographic area, but also compare it to state and national level data. Within this section, there are very specific data elements that are requested. So you want to talk about the concentration of homeless individuals and homeless veterans in your project service area. Most of this information can be found in the recent challenge report or supplement to the AHAR, or from the very recent COC point in time count if you have access to that data. You can find information about the poverty and unemployment rates from the census data. You probably have to use the 2000 census for that. You want to outline what gaps exist in the local services that exacerbate the employment barriers of homeless veterans. And you also want to outline the employment possibilities in the area, including the local job markets and the potential opportunities for your veterans. And given your extensive experience, I'm sure a lot of this will come as second nature, but just to notice that these specific components are required for that section. It's a little bit different than in previous years. If you take a look at the overall approach and strategy on slide 26, you can conceptualize this with 4 dimensions and then pervasive supportive services at each part of the process. I'm going to go really quickly through the dimensions because a lot of this will be information that you could tell me about much better than I could tell you about. And if you want more information on it, definitely join Tuesday's call because we go through it in more detail. I will just point out here that the participant flowchart is definitely necessary. It shows the services and the sequence that for the service delivery, so that's definitely an important component to add to your application. Going to dimension 1, which is outreach, you do all this really well, so I'll just make a few points that your goal is to showcase how you connect to avoid duplication. You provide project orientation and awareness workshops to the service providers in your community. You not only want to reach out to the homeless veterans, but also the other programs, both mainstream and otherwise, that can potentially introduce eligible homeless veterans to your HVRP program. The last point on there is stand down. Don't include stand down funding in this budget application. That's a separate application for funding. But you do need to participate in stand down events, which I'm sure a lot of you already do, but just an important piece on the funding that is a separate application. And I included a link to some resources at the end of the presentation for stand down funding and development. If you have more questions on that, we can definitely talk about that at a later time. Looking at dimension 2, the assessment and intake, the goal there is pretty self-explanatory. You want to identify and address barriers to employment for participants to ensure long-term success. A focus in this section was really on formalizing the testing process for assessing abilities, interests, needs, and barriers. And you can look at this as having 5 steps that you're going to outline when you're writing through this process. The first one is that assessment piece. The second one is to establish the process for assessing the skills and services that are needed to facilitate employment. A new piece, and I forgot to mark it as new on here, but you want to be able to quantify participant willingness to enter and engage in employment following receipt of services. A lot of programs have struggled because they do have individuals who come into their program early on with the stated intention of engaging in employment upon receipt of services, but they might just be coming in for transportation tokens or something along that line. So you need to be able to quantify what exactly the participant willingness will be for the individuals who are enrolled in your program. Step 4 is showcasing your testing process to determine the participant needs to obtain and retain gainful employment. And then the last step is connecting to VA benefits, which you're probably already doing either through the VA directly or through VSOs in your community. Looking at Dimension 3, Employment and Training Services, this is what you all do very well. The individual employment plan is useful for 2 reasons. It's tracking the participant's progress, but it also needs to include a plan for being regularly updated as the individual moves through that process. And again, I wanted to note that CWT is an important resource that should be built into IEPs, but it doesn't count as actual employment placement. If you look at the third bullet, demonstrated process for employment and training service delivery, I wanted to point out the jobs and training section. That bullet doesn't actually make sense, but I'll talk about it briefly. The jobs and training that you're connecting your veterans to and that you're writing about in this section of the application should be jobs that are locally in demand and also provide long-term career potential. So even if the initial placement isn't the long-term career goal of the individual, the entity where they are receiving training or where they are employed offers that possibility of longer-term career advancement. When you're talking about training opportunities that are local training opportunities, you want to talk about a few specific things. Definitely include the length of the training, what the curriculum looks like, and how that training will benefit the veterans in the project, focusing as much as possible on the connection to local employment. And on slide 30, I just have the critical employment services that are required through the HVRP program. If you move on to slide 31, dimension 4, the follow-up services, one point to note here is the important connection of the state employment insurance and the role that that can play in providing concrete support to your results. You can get a lot of good data on your program participants through a formal relationship to get that information. We'll talk quickly about the quality of your linkages. This is something that's integral to every HVRP program and is really the heart of what you do. Just to note a few of these pieces. You are directed to register as an employment network with the Social Security Administration's Ticket to Work program. We can help you through this process through SSA's dedicated HVRP liaisons. They have a technical assistance provider called Maximus who works very regularly with HVRP programs to try and help them through that process to make it as easy as possible. We'll probably do a couple trainings with them later, so if you do have interest in that, just be aware for those announcements. Those will come out shortly. For this application, you want to demonstrate the process by which you connect program participants to the services that meet their needs, including but not limited to PTSD and TBI assessments, sexual trauma counseling, and alcohol and drug rehab. Especially in areas where there are increased numbers of homeless OIF and OIF OEF veterans and female veterans experiencing homelessness, many of whom are dealing with the debilitating effects of co-occurring disorders, access to those treatment options that match their needs will be critical to long-term employment outcomes. So that connection is specifically outlined in this SGA, so you do want to address that as much as possible. You want to create a network list that showcases who these providers are that you work with, what their sources of funding are for that specific activity, and the type of referral system that you either have with them or you propose to have with those organizations. Next slide is just possible partners. The only one I'll point out there, the SSVF programs, because that program is going to expand so much, definitely want to be aware of SSVF grantees and the role that that program can play in supporting the efforts of your organization and your HVRP program. Looking at slide 34, the organizational capacity and experience, the section is broken down into two pieces, your staff experience and your organizational capacity. Because we don't have a ton of time, just take a look at page 50 on the SGA that has a list of the necessary staff background information that you will want to include in your organizational chart and to outline about your staff. Now, when you're addressing your organizational experience specifically, which is on slide 35, there is a change this year in how you do need to do that for your program. At a minimum, previous grantees need to submit your most recently completed fourth quarter TPR and TPN and the plan goal spreadsheet for that corresponding year. This is a change from what was required previously, and these actually don't count toward your 15-page maximum for your technical proposal. So that's very good news. Now, your housing strategy. The housing strategy should differentiate between the different types of housing, so emergency, temporary, transitional, permanent. Within permanent, you want to be able to define the difference between affordable and supportive housing, both talking about HUD, VASH, and regular Section 8 vouchers. As always, no HVRP funds can be used for housing in any way, so I emphasize again the importance of the SSVF, the Supportive Services for Veteran Families program, and connecting to those grantees, because there is probably some overlap in the eligibility between some of your HVRP participants and individuals that would be eligible to receive services under SSVF. There is additional clarification on how the HUD-VASH program can work with the HVRP program and the process by which you enroll individuals in HVRP and then subsequently with HUD-VASH. As long as the individual isn't leased up and it's not an executed HUD-VASH voucher and that individual is still technically homeless, they can be eligible for HVRP, but it's just an important piece to be aware of, because if you write into your program a strategy for immediately connecting HVRP participants to HUD-VASH vouchers through the VA, those individuals might not be eligible for HVRP if they're leased up before they're actually enrolled in the HVRP program. So just be aware of that as you are writing out that component of your strategy. So we're just about at the end here. Take a look at slides 37 and 38, and you can go back to these later. The first one, these are pieces that are need to be included in your application but don't count toward your 50-page maximum. Slide 38 has the components of your application that are mentioned throughout the discussion of your technical proposal, but they're not included in the 15 pages. So quite a bit of documentation there that you have to have. So we're going to talk for a few minutes about the changes to the SGA, and then we'll go ahead and open it up for questions. If you look, I've broken this into a couple different categories, starting from the most simple to the maybe most controversial, most complicated. First one is just the structure of the SGA. The optional year funding discussion in previous years has been in the actual SGA. Now it's in the VPL. So take a look at that on the HVRP SGA site for this program year. Take a look at the VPL because that has more information on the optional year funding. And last year, the program components were outlined within the scope of the program design earlier in the application. Now all of those pieces have been moved over to the technical proposal to directly correspond what's needed in your program to the point system and the awarding based on the point system. Submission information on slide 40. We've talked about this, that you can't use Excel documents now and that it's actually 4 p.m., not 5 p.m. Eastern time. We talked about the submission clarification for grants.gov, but let me know if you have additional questions on that. We also talked about making sure that your two copies, if you're submitting it in hard copy, are quote-unquote copy-ready when you send those in. And the last piece there, the hard copy letter, has to do with if you do have more than one submission that you do need to send in that hard copy letter, letting them know which application they should grade. And if at all possible, that should go in with your mailed application. Let's take a look at the structure of the application. As I mentioned, the TPR and the TPN and the planned goals spreadsheet that corresponds to the program year for that final quarter, those are no longer included in the page limit for the 15-page technical proposal. So that's, I know, a big help to a lot of organizations because that was difficult last year. Many of the documents that were in the previous cost proposal section have now been moved to the attachments to the technical proposal. So definitely pay special attention to which documents fall under which category underneath that general structure listed there when you're putting together your application. Looking on slide 42, these are changes to the actual program itself listed in the SGA. These are deleted components or additional restrictions. Previous years, or at least last year, there was a discussion quite a bit about the continuum of care and the importance of connecting to that. While that still is stated in the SGA, it's not emphasized to the extent that it was before. You're also still encouraged to work directly with community colleges, but it's no longer stated that you have to focus on those with traditionally high enrollment of minorities. But definitely connecting to community colleges and local universities is of critical importance. Last year, there were additional points up for grabs if you were able to outline a strategy for working with chronically homeless veterans. Now there's no specific additional extra points that are specifically tied to that, but you are encouraged to outline that strategy, especially as it results to the housing component using HUD-VASH. As I mentioned earlier, an important restriction on your spending here is the payment to participants, either through wages or as stipends in replacement for wages. And then another piece is the salary and bonus limitations. That's an additional restriction that's listed. If we look to slide 43, these are general program changes. As I mentioned in the need for the project section, there's really specific data that's asked for in that section. You need to register in the CCR. There's clarification on the intellectual property rights piece, and I'll just let you read through that instead of going through it here to save on time. There's that increased focus on testing in the assessment section. This form, the OMB form, is a new addition that you need to make sure to add. Looking at the urban versus non-urban, there's definitely a difference in the overall number. I think that last year the cutoff for the 75 largest cities, it was around 560,000, and now it's in the 200,000s. So definitely take a look and make sure that you have the right appendix for that list of 75 largest cities to make sure that you do have the correct category for your application. There's also increased clarity on the transparency section, so be aware of that. Also, we talked about the clarification on VWIP and HVRP co-enrollment, and also clarification on HUD-VASH and enrollment in that program as well. If you look at slides 44 and 45, we put a ton of resources there. Most of these are listed in the SGA at one point, but a few of them are just additional resources that I think would be useful as you're building out your application. So be sure to share those with the staff that are working both on this application but also in your HVRP program, because a lot of those can be useful. And then just the last slide is contact information. If you have questions specifically for Cassandra Mitchell at Department of Labor, her contact information is there. Or if you want to contact me directly, my name is Bailey Crone again with NCHV, and our phone number and my email address is right there for you. Once again, thank you for being here on a Friday afternoon. I know we went through a lot of that kind of quickly, but looking forward to your questions. And if you think of one later, or if you'd rather just shoot me an offline email, that's completely fine. Looking forward to working with you more throughout this process, and hope this was helpful. So we can go ahead and open it up to questions now.
Thank you. At this time, to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Sandra Daniels.
I was wondering about the CD,
yes.
The contents on the CD if we submit a mail application.
Yes.
Is that everything that we created on our computer, including the budgets and the narrative? And
yes. You want to have all of the files, just like you would save the files in a regular folder on your computer.
Okay.
You would want to save them in the exact order that you're submitting them
okay.
on that CD. So when you pull up the CD, it's very, very clearly organized.
And so we need to scan the signed documents with the signatures, right?
Yeah, I would do that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Nathaniel Saltz.
This
Hello, Nathaniel. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great.
I'm wondering about when they're looking at our grants, will they be comparing our new grant application against our old grant application or only against other new grantees? For example, if we were looking at making a change in our grant application, in our goals chart,
mm-hmm.
it's becoming more expensive to serve the same amount of clients with the same amount of money with transportation,
right.
staffing costs, would they be comparing our new goals that we're looking at with our old goals, or just comparing against other applications?
So the only data that they're going to have to look at is what you give them. So the only comparison that they'll be making, they'll be looking at your past performance, and I can't exactly state what it is they'll be comparing against, but I know that they will have access to that most recently completed fourth quarter and also what your plan goals were for that. Now, whether or not they're going to be comparing that data to what you're proposing now, I can't speak to that actually, but I wouldn't think that it would hurt if you do have changes that you are needing to make from last year or from that data to your current application. It wouldn't hurt to explain why those changes are being made. So, for example, you know, this type of training is more expensive, which is why we're anticipating this level of cost. That would be clarification that you would want to give anyway for the overall cost of a component of your budget, so it can't hurt to explain if there is that discrepancy. But you are being graded against on the strength of your application, so not necessarily being graded against the other applicants, if that makes sense. They have very strict guidelines on how they grade you just against the grading rubric.
Your next question comes from Bill Burley.
Just out of curiosity, when are they going to put all of the technical proposals and everything online?
When are they going to do that?
I mean, why?
Why are they going to do that?
Yeah.
Just for transparency, I don't know the exact reasoning behind it. I don't know. I think just to increase public exposure to what the HVRP programs are doing. That's all I don't know.
Your next question comes from Steve Wilkes.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Bailey. Hi. A little bit about the payments to participants.
Yes.
Some on-the-job training programs require that we fund them for technical training.
Right.
And because of the course length, they also pay the students
mm-hmm.
out of the chunk of money that we send them. Is that going to be prohibited?
I had noticed that and want to submit that specific piece for additional clarification, because I can see how it can be argued that if the individual is receiving training through the OJT process, that is actually a training expense, not a wage or a stipend. So I'm going to ask for additional clarification on that specific component, because a lot of programs do use the OJT process as a really critical asset to get their veterans in the door for really great employment opportunities. So I do want to obtain that clarification. So thanks for bringing that up. I'll make sure that that's included on the list of points that we submit for clarification.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Your next question comes from Jenny Johnson.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. Back to the question related to the past performance requirement to include those last reports.
Yes.
It makes me wonder how that's going to be viewed. if it's not used for scoring purposes, I wonder if it'll be given a consideration when they're making the final determinations of who will actually be awarded. An example would be your application does score the complete 20 points mm-hmm. in that section. However, they can tell from past performance that you may have been having some issues related to certain aspects of your performance. Mm-hmm. How do you think they plan to compare that or use that for decision-making purposes as to who will be receive the final awards?
You know, because I only have the overall points breakdowns for those sections, I only have that point breakdown that you'll have by looking at the SGA. I don't know within that section if it's, say, 20 points, how many points are given to each specific component. So I can't actually speak to that because I don't know how much weight is given to that. I can ask for additional clarification, but I have a feeling that because it's related to the actual grading of the proposals, that you won't get feedback on the weight of each one of those components until following grant awards when you can ask for feedback on your application. So short answer is I don't know because we don't have the further points breakdown. But I'll ask about that.
And there are no other audio questions.
Okay, great. And I'll just take the opportunity to once again say thank you both for being on today's presentation and for all of the hard work that you do. Definitely here as a resource for you. You can tell it's Friday afternoon. As a resource for you. So looking forward to working with the organizations as you apply for future funding and as you're awarded in the future. So once again, don't hesitate to submit a question to me via email or additional comments on the SGA and be on the lookout for the survey that will come out either this afternoon or first thing on Monday. That's another opportunity to not only give me feedback on today's call but also to give feedback on the SGA and how you see that implementing your activities. So I hope everyone has a great weekend and a good Easter, and thank you.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.